Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to the Runner's World podcast with me, Rick Pearson.
And me, Ben Hobson.
Today we're talking with running physio Tom Goom about all things shin splints.
It's a good one.
It's a good
one.
I
mean, I say this about every single one of them. But Tom's great at just breaking down what the problem is, what the problem may be, what the many options that you have when it comes to problems, and then how to sort of approach them. And I think the shin is one of those ones where we have a multitude of recurring things all squished in underneath the shin splints kind of name brand.
And very misdiagnosed kind of problem as well.
Yeah. So if you've got any form of shin pain, discomfort issue,
listen on,
because this is the one.
This is the one for you. We've both been running, Ben. You've been doing the Ben Fleet 15, which was actually named after you, I found out.
Yes. Yeah. You spell my name B-E-N and then the Fleet is silent, so no one ever says it. But my full name is Ben Fleet. I went out and ran into a block headwind for a good amount of time at the weekend.
Fantastic.
which was good. No, it's a great race. In and around Hadley and Ben Fleet in Essex.
Okay, yeah.
Along the seawall, some
off-road, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, trail. There's a little bit of road joining bits and pieces up here and there. And you finish on the Olympic mountain bike course from 2012 Olympics. And there's a very nice little aggressive gradient to finish on.
Amazing. So,
yeah, it was a good, really fun race. Did it with my mates, Josh and Matt from the dog pack.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I've heard
of that. And yeah, it was a good day out. We were sort of in the car deliberating whether or not we were going, you know, it was one of those ones where we've all been tired and a bit hurt in different ways, not chronically, but just like a bit like niggles or whatever it was. And we just kind of went, are we gonna do this? Like, should we? Is this? And we went, oh, come on.
Yeah, good for you. Yeah.
Turned out to be a great day.
Yeah. I think if you're racing in January, you've already won.
Agreed.
You're saying yes to something, aren't you?
Yeah, and it's a really good way of like benchmarking the start of the year.
Yeah, exactly.
I've raced 50 miles once before, but it's been a while.
Yeah, it's got rare, isn't it?
It's not like we're doing this. I've done this one, and we've got a 15 one in March.
The Orion.
So maybe this is the year for me racing 15 miles. But yeah, it was really nice. It was really good to sort of, as you say, like January doesn't feel like a month really where you would race a lot, but actually there was, you know, everyone was out, the noise was good, the crowds were cheering, and it really sort of like didn't feel January. So it was, it was nice.
I think, I went down to Canterbury for the Canterbury 10-miler, which is like a kind of classic road race, I think. 10-mile distance, one of my favourites, as you know.
It really is.
Yeah. And the weather was a bit windy. It's pretty cold. But it was, mate, similar. It was pretty low fuss. Good sort of average standard of runner.
Yeah.
Very well organised. I felt good doing it. I got this very strange like stitch like 7.5 miles that ended up going, like, it was quite low in my stomach, and I actually had to stop for about a minute.
Well, you did at one point think that your appendix was about to burst.
Yeah, and I was like, and the problem was I was wearing these shoes, I won't name the brand, but one was red and one was blue.
All right. Clues.
And when you're on the side of the road walking in a pair of red and blue shoes, it's a bit like going, turning up to a football match in white boots and being a bad player.
Right, got it.
It was a bit like,
you weren't doing the shoes justice.
Yeah, exactly. I didn't do the shoes justice, which I really like the shoes as well. But anyway, I got it done, and I felt really good afterwards. Actually, I felt like, oh, I actually kind of achieved something in January. And like you say, it sort of sets you up. Don't necessarily have to do your greatest ever performance.
Yeah, but I think that's it. It wasn't like the best race of, you know, like it wasn't. I felt really happy with the result, having very little sort of like expectation or that sort of stuff. And I feel it was one of those races where a lot of the time, I think if you don't feel 100% ready to like absolutely give it your all at the start of a race, you're already feeling a little bit on the back foot.
Yeah.
You haven't brought your best self to the day.
Yeah.
And I think that can be a bit like, well, what's the point?
Sure. Yeah.
Whereas this wasn't like that at all. This was like, well, we've made it, which is already a success. And on we go. So, yeah, I had a good time. Good time. Look at us just racing around
good
the country.
Good for you, Ben Fleet. That's what I say. Good for you.
Wow. So, you know, if anyone else knows any more 15-mile and 10-mile races.
Oh, yeah. Please let us know.
Yeah, let us know. Podcast at runnersworld.co.uk.
All right. Well, let's get our guest of the week on.
Yeah, let's do it. Guest of the week. Here in the studio. Guest of the week. Sometimes on the phone.
Our guest this week is a leading running physio based at the Body Rehab Studios in Brighton and Hove, and he's here to give us a lowdown on shin splints. So, Tom Green, welcome back to the Runner's World podcast.
Thank you for having me back.
Big one.
Yeah.
I feel like
big. I think this is a popular injury.
Very big. Tom, is this a popular one? People really love this one. Is it a very common thing that you see?
Oh, yeah, people love a bit of shin pain, definitely.
Right, yeah. I think let's get into that then. Shin pain, shin splints, shin stuff. Like what, because I mean, people will probably think one is one and all are the same. So kind of like, let's talk about the shin and what it's comprised of and what the possible pitfalls of the shin are.
Yeah, so runners tend to use the term shin splints to refer to nearly any pain that you can get in that shin region. But we tend to think of it as a specific diagnosis, which is a very long term, which is medial tibial stress syndrome. Now, what that is that the medial part of the tibia, which is the larger of the two shin bones, so the bit on the kind of inside of the leg, becomes irritated by the running and you get this pain, and it's kind of classically quite sort of spread out along that part of the shin, and it's there with running and impact and then settles quite quickly with rest. Right. So that's kind of the main diagnosis we see, the most common cause, but there are actually lots of other causes of shin pain that people can get confused with, and some that need quite different treatment techniques and things.
That's interesting then. So what could shin splints be kind of misdiagnosed for, do you think?
Well, the biggest concern we have is actually sometimes people will have a stress fracture.
Mm.
So rather than it just being a bit of irritation of that tibia, of that large shin bone, actually sometimes they'll actually have a stress fracture of that bone, which obviously is more serious and needs to be more carefully examined. So I always say with shin pain, particularly if it's been persisting, it is worth getting it checked out to rule those things out. The other thing is that where the pain is, where it's located, is quite important. So this kind of shin splints we're talking about, the medial issue, is around the inside of the shin. Whereas if you're getting pain around the outside of the shin, higher up in the muscle or around the outside, that's a different condition. So it's where it's important to try and work out what's the actual diagnosis here before we start managing it.
Yeah, I've always been confused that sort of like that front ridge of bone that you can feel along the shin, and like people have always sort of talked about muscle tearing away from that bone, and is that a shin splint? Like, what's that? That just sounds awful. I mean, like but I think that's where a lot of confusion comes from.
Yeah, that kind of idea we've thankfully moved away from, because it doesn't sound very nice, and it isn't really what's happening. The muscle's not pulling away from bone or anything drastic like that. I think of it more as the bone being just irritated from working too hard. We've talked in the previous podcast that, you know, tendons and joints, they don't like being worked too hard with the running, and bones similar. So it's almost, it becomes inflamed along the surface of the bone, and that's what we feel. So it's not muscles pulling away, or you know, it isn't really a splint as such. That's why it's not such a great term, if you see what I mean.
Yeah, I think it's misleading. Is shin splints more of a beginner injury? I kind of associate maybe with some people who are new to running and get shin splints, rather than maybe somebody who's been doing it for
Than like an overuse thing.
Yeah, I don't know that many people who've been running for 10 years who suddenly talk about shin splints, but maybe I'm wrong.
No, I'd say it is more common in novice runners, actually. Yeah. So new runners, they haven't built that kind of tolerance to running that we get. You know, if you've been running for several years, your body does adapt and get used to it. Whereas new runners don't have that. And quite often they'll perhaps do a bit too much too soon. And yeah, so they often will be the people that develop these shin pains. It's also a little bit more common in female runners than men. And there are some other factors linked to it. So things linked to running style, muscle strength. Strength, for example, like weakness in the glutes can be a factor. So there's quite a few different things that may play a role in this injury developing.
I was going to ask Tom, is this very much like a specific to the shin issue, as in that muscle in the shin is weak, or is it, as you've sort of hinted, is it actually just that it's more of a smaller controlling muscle and the bigger issue tends to be something else, or is it a combination of both?
I think it's probably not just going to come down to like one muscle or anything like that. And I think one thing we know now is that, you know, really any bones in the leg, if you work them too hard, they can react, and that they react in a way that involves pain. And really the key driver for that is how hard and how much we're training. That's kind of the key thing. It pushes it beyond what it can cope with. The muscles do play a role. You know, we think stronger muscles work like better shock absorbers, perhaps to help reduce the risk of these types of bony injury. But that's kind of the whole leg we're interested in, rather than just one, you know, one specific muscle. Got it. You know, when we're thinking about these kind of medial tibial stress issues.
I'm always interested by those weights you can get, you know, this sort of, it's like a band that goes over your shoe or your foot, and then you load up a plate onto the back end of it, and you can kind of flex, you can almost look like a bicep curl but with your foot. And that sort of strengthens up that. Is that you know, those sorts of exercises?
Yeah, so those are really popular at the moment, but they're not actually something that's been sort of researched a lot. And I think there's one thing we probably, you know, want to talk about a little bit with this is, you know, these couple of different diagnoses that can cause pain in this region. So we talked about medial tibial stress, we talked about stress fracture. The other one is more overload of tibialis anterior. So that is more of a specific muscle issue. So if people listening in are actually getting pain towards the outside of the shin, in that kind of muscular bit at the top, that isn't so much a kind of bony issue. We think it's that muscle fatiguing during running. So it's quite a different condition, but it still comes under that kind of broad sort of shin splints definition that runners use. And the treatments will overlap a bit, but there might be where we want to look a little bit at assessing that muscle and you know, addressing its needs, really.
In terms of running style, does that play a role? Is it something that maybe midfoot or forefoot strikers would have more issues with, or heel strikers, or does running style not play such a key role in this?
Yeah, running style does play a key role, I think. So there is some research that those with a lower step rate or cadence, as runners will often call it, are more likely to develop shin pain. So people with a step rate, I think it's 164 or less, seem to be more likely to go on to get shin pain. And it is probably the case because when you have a low step rate, you're more likely to overstride. And it's that puts more stress on the shin. It's also perhaps more likely you're going to develop some issues around that medial shin if you've got a very narrow stride. So if you're someone who almost runs like they're crossing over a line, or you find your knees brushed together as you run, again, that can put a little bit more stress on that medial part of the tibia. For that, you know, tibialis anterior issue, that kind of muscular part around the front, that is also going to be linked to overstriding, because we tend to land with the foot more dorsiflexed, more raised up, which works that muscle more. Now, if you move to midfoot, then yes, it will reduce the stress on that muscle to some degree. But if you move all the way to forefoot, you end up working the calf more. So for a lot of people, the strategies we might use would be looking at perhaps increasing the step rate a little bit. You know, that can reduce the stress both on the shin bone, but also on tibialis anterior, that muscle that can be overloaded.
How much does things like ankle flexation, shoe choice, like your foot strength, how much does that come into play with shin issues?
I think it's quite important. I think if you're quite strong through the foot and ankle, then generally, I think it's probably less likely you're going to develop these shin issues. Although it's fair to say there's not a lot of research on that. It's just sort of personal experience. And the footwear can make a difference too. So with things like kind of your medial tibial stress, that kind of pain around the inside, we might suggest perhaps a more supportive shoe with a larger heel to toe drop, a little bit more support through the arch of the foot, a bit more cushioning might be quite helpful. And actually going to a more minimalist shoe can increase the stress on that part of the shin. So we wouldn't tend to do that. Now, this is where the diagnosis matters though, because that muscular pain I talked about on the outside of the shin responds the other way. So they tend to do better with a lighter shoe without so much heel to toe drop, because it's that muscle, tibialis anterior, that's got to lift the weight of the shoe. So this is where actually seeing someone getting a diagnosis is really important, because it will change some of the things you do.
Interesting when you talked about cadence, Tom, because that's obviously a term that gets discussed a lot. And it seems to be the cure for a few injuries, getting your cadence up, if your cadence is in the kind of 160 mark. How, as a physio, do you actually encourage a quicker cadence?
This is really easy, actually. So first of all, we obviously want to test what people's cadence is. A lot of runners listening in, your GPS watches will often be able to tell you this fairly accurately. So we start with the patient's baseline. That's really important. And we usually try and increase it by about 5 to 10% using a metronome. So there's lots of different apps you can use that will play a beep as a metronome. So what you tend to do is use that. You set it at the target that you want for your step rate, and you literally just run to the beep. And it's very, very easy to do it like that. It's the easiest way to change your step rate. Often runners will find if they do this on a treadmill first, it's easier because your speed will be fixed. So you practice a bit on the treadmill, run to the beat of that metronome. And then when you feel comfortable with it, you practice it, out in your normal running environment.
And it's time for an ad break.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Right, back to the show.
Have you done that before, right?
I have actually, and I was told off because I did it during an ultra race, and someone was like, "You cannot have that playing."
Oh, you wow!
Because I was like, wanted to get into like a 180. I don't know what. I think I was going through a weird period of my life. And within about a mile, someone said, "You just cannot have that being played," because I actually didn't have headphones.
Oh my god, you're that guy!
So, come on, I mean, yeah. they were right.
They were right.
They were right. But I like it as an idea, and I think
it's great. I've done it, and it really helps. Like, yeah. It's a really useful little thing, and I think that. Lots of people will immediately think that sounds quite intense, like having to, but it's actually quite, it becomes quite...
like meditative.
Yeah, almost that. You kind of like find a zone and you kind of sit in this little, tapping it out. And yeah, I think it will definitely make a big difference.
And I think like, obviously like 180 is like, and obviously, well, Tom, you can tell us this, but it seems to be tight as like the gold standard. But for people who maybe have a slow cadence. It's much faster than a lot of people might think, I think. Maybe like, yeah, really, this quick, you know?
Yeah, 180 is one of those ones where it's a little bit of a myth, really. Our step rate, our cadence actually changes a bit with speed anyway. So this idea of saying, oh, we just got to do 180 all the time because a very small group of elite runners did it in one
yeah,
study,
yeah,
it is not, you know, it also changes with things like how tall you are and things like that. So this is why we always go with the baseline with what the person has rather than just a sort of arbitrary number. So we start with their baseline,
yeah,
and then we increase 5 to 10% from there. The other things that you can do now with the modern sports watch is you can actually set a cadence kind of target zone. So you can say, I want my cadence to be, say, 165 to 170, and then the watches will kick in their own metronome if you fall outside of that. So if your step rate drops. But it is hard, you know, because think about it, you're going to be increasing the amount of cycles you have, the amount of times you've got to move your leg in a minute, if you see what I mean. So usually we don't say, right, set up your metronome, go do 10K with it. It's really hard to do that. It's usually better to begin with little bursts of 20 to 30 seconds when you remember during a run, get used to it, see how it feels. See, you know, if you're doing it for shin pain, for example, see if it helps your symptoms and then go from there, really.
In a sort of the wonderful world of prehab, so we've got people listening who haven't got any currently shin problems, but they're thinking, oh, I don't want that. That sounds rubbish. What are the things that, are there sort of, you know, standing against the wall and lifting your toes? Are there sort of exercises like that, you know, like very focused on the things we've discussed already that can kind of like aid in sort of making sure that the shin is robust?
Yeah, I think it's a good idea to do some strength work around the foot and ankle. So you could, just as you said, you could, you know, stand with your back against the wall, do some lifts, so lifting the toes up to work the muscles through the front of the shin. You could add some weight into that. So people can use resistance band. I know some people actually hook their foot into like a small kettlebell. So you can do that kind of thing to strengthen up that muscle if you want to. I personally think there's probably a bit more mileage in strengthening up the calf. The calf is a major shock absorber and manages a lot more weight than those muscles around the front of the shin. So, you know, if I was thinking about like preventative exercises for this, you know, strengthening the calf, the quads, the glutes, those big muscles that manage a lot of load would be good. But really what's key is planning your training and your recovery from that training. Because you could be super, super strong, you know, in the gym 4 or 5 days a week, lifting huge weights. But if you suddenly go out and run more than the body's ready for, it's still likely to hurt.
So the shin is really one of those load, like volume kind of problems most of the time where you would find when people come in, they've, as you say, they can be as robust physically as they can be. But if they've gone from 0 to 30 mile weeks or whatever, that's really when the shin stuff kicks in.
Yes. Yeah. And often intensity is a piece of that puzzle too.
Right.
There's a lot more stress on the bone as we run faster. So you often see people, yeah, I've really pushed how much running I'm doing, but I'm also doing 2 or 3 speed sessions a week. And now my shin's really, really sore. So it's trying to find out what they can manage. And this is where there's a really big difference in management of these types of shin issues is that we don't recommend running in pain. That is a big difference. Like we often say you can run with a bit of discomfort with a tendon issue, but if it's a bony stress problem, it doesn't do well running with pain.
Yeah, because we've talked on this before as a sort of a pain scale, and if something's manageable, and if it is, then that's okay because it's not gonna increase the damage being done. But with this, with a bone-related thing, it's actually, this is a, unfortunately for those who suffer from this, this is a stop running sort of situation.
It is, or it's a reduce the running to pain-free levels. That's the thing. So, you know, if someone's listening in and, you know you're pretty comfortable for 3K, but after that you start to feel some shin symptoms, then it would be sensible to cut it back to what feels pain-free. That's the thing. They have tried, one study said, okay, well, runners can keep going up to a 4 out of 10 pain as part of this program in the research, but it took them over 100 days to build up their running to just 20 minutes.
Yeah.
You know, that's over 3 months to get to 20 minutes.
That's
so, and it's what we see in clinic. People keep running through these types of shin pain and it just keeps it irritated. So we'll often either dial it right back to a pain-free level, or we'll suggest a rest period from running. Sometimes it can be as little as a couple of weeks to really settle the symptoms down. People can often cross-train with non-impact stuff, so they can cycle, swim, cross-train in the gym, rower, anything pain-free, and then we retest them. We make sure they're not getting pain with impact tests like jumping, jogging on the spot, hopping, that kind of thing, and then we gradually build them back up again and keep it pain-free. That's one of the key ways we manage these medial tibial stress syndromes, you know, that pain around the inside of the shin.
Does surface play a role, Tom? Would you be more likely to get shin pain, shin splints, if you're running like purely on hard surfaces, or would a return to, like, if you were returning from it, maybe running on soft surfaces start off might be something you'd recommend, or is there not actually much evidence for that stuff?
There's not a lot. I think probably we could recommend treadmill over road. Probably less stress on the shin bone when you're running on a treadmill compared to when you run on the road. And your step rate tends to be a bit higher, about 5% higher on a treadmill than it would be on the road anyway. So, but really we govern it by symptoms, because you can always have a theory. Oh, I think you'll be more comfortable on the grass, or I think you'd be more comfortable on the treadmill. But we've got to listen to our runners and see if they say, oh, I can't do road, it's really sore, but treadmill's very comfortable. That's what's gonna guide us. Other things, obviously, running slower will help, because there's less stress on the shin there. Running on the flat or actually downhill has a little bit less stress. This is a surprising one for people, but downhill tends to be a little bit less stress for the shin potentially. We might get them to work on their stride width, run a tiny little bit wider if that's an issue for them. So there'd be lots of ways we'd adapt it to try and keep it pain-free.
That's an interesting point, Tom, with width, because it's really something we've never discussed. We've always talked about cadence and people sort of like how they go through the gait cycle. But the width of someone's running gait, that sounds like you've mentioned that knees brushing or sort of almost like an overlapping of where the feet cross on that center line, if you had a sort of line running down the body. How do you go around sort of getting someone to adjust that? Is that a muscular thing? Is that a physiological thing?
It's more of a technique thing, really. And most of the changes we want to make to running gait actually focus on changing the technique itself. Running gait doesn't change that much in response to strength work, for example. You know, so people might think, oh, well, you know, I need to strengthen my glutes to help kind of this hip position, but that doesn't actually change the gait very much. So it's simple stuff. Quite often when you watch someone run and they're narrow, what you'll see is that their knees brush together as they're running, and they just don't notice it because it's so normal for them. So I would use a really simple cue, like, don't let your knees touch while you're running, so that people just create a little space between the knees. You can suggest just running wider, so focus on keeping a little bit more of space between your legs as you run. But this takes a bit of practice, more so than increasing the step rate, which most people get quite quickly. Most people overcompensate, so they run really, really wide to begin with, and it's very uncomfortable. If you try it yourself, it looks and feels pretty horrible. So it takes a bit of practice, bit of feedback to kind of get to a level like, yeah, this is what we're aiming for here. A little bit of space between the knees, but not running like you've just got off a horse.
Yeah, I did a lot of that actually, because my right leg was very much crossing the midline.
Oh, right.
And it did take a couple of months of actually trying to get it right.
Really? I mean, you're fighting against... Cadence is very much a manipulable thing, as Tom mentioned. Yeah. Like, the faster you go naturally, your cadence increases and you can do that. But if you're sort of fighting against the natural sort of like alignment of your body, I guess, in sort of...
Yeah, it was quite a trial mentally to sort of remind myself to do it.
Because look at you now.
Oh, no, it's... The absolute epitome of efficient running form. But because I would naturally think, and it sounds like this is wrong, that, you know, stuff like, you know, it's kind of lateral movement, like with a resistance band, where you would do kind of like marching to the left and marching to the right, where you're moving your leg away from the midline.
Or like a lateral lunge.
Yeah, anything like that that kind of is moving the body away from midline, I would think, oh, maybe that's actually helping create some kind of width when I run, because I'm strengthening the muscles on the side of the glute. But that doesn't sound like that's actually true. Maybe I should stop doing it.
I mean, those are great movements to do.
Yeah.
But the thing is, running is a real skill element in running, and it only seems to change from, you know, what we see in the research and clinical experience when you practice that skill. So you can do lunges and glute strengthening, and that's really helpful. You know, if you strengthen up those shock absorbers, that's a good thing, but it doesn't seem to change how we run very much. We have to kind of practice running and change that if we want to change it. And you don't have to, you know, people listening into this, you don't have to change your running gait to successfully overcome shin pain. You can as part of it, because it can help reduce the stress on the shin. But many people, if they give this a chance to settle and then, you know, gradually build back up again, they can do quite well. But I think a good starting point is seeing someone to work out, like, what is the issue? You know, as I said, there's probably three main ones in the shin region, you know, medial tibial stress syndrome, stress fracture or overload of tibialis anterior. So it's trying to work out which of those might it be, or maybe something different, and then planning around addressing that and your needs, really.
Thank goodness for people like Tom, because otherwise we'd been carrying on telling people that the bone was ripping away from their shins. Yeah. That was it. Like, you know, we've never said that.
Yeah,
right? But it's really, thank you, Tom, for joining us once again, and an incredibly informative summary on the shin and its. And what it's, you know, it's a very useful bit of kit when you're running the shin.
Oh, you need your shin.
You need that.
You do need them.
Yeah.
one tiny extra point I would add.
Yeah.
If you've got pain in the front of your shin and it's very pinpoint, like in the front on the bone, that needs to be checked out really quickly. Because there's a certain type of bone stress injury we call an anterior stress fracture, and those require very rapid investigation. So if you're listening into this and it doesn't feel like it's around the inside or around the outside, it's more in the middle and it's on the bone, get that checked out pretty quickly, I would.
And that would be one that's like you can put your finger on a very specific spot.
More typically with stress fractures of the shin, they're a specific spot that's tender on the bone. Whereas with a medial tibial stress, it's quite spread out along the surface.
Got it.
But they do present in lots of different ways. And it's something that actually, if you've got a stress fracture in that region, quite often people need to be non-weight bearing for 6 to 8 weeks on crutches. So these are the kind of things we want to be, you know, anybody listening in, if you have any symptoms in those regions, just get it checked out. Most of the time with a good history and a good examination, we can say, no, it's not that, but this is what you need to focus on. But those symptoms, I wouldn't just ignore and try and train through.
Tom, thank you so much for your time coming on the Runner's World podcast. Great to have you back on. I'm sure we haven't covered all the injuries. There's more that we can cover still, for sure.
Yeah, there's loads.
Absolutely. Thank you once again for having me. It's been a real pleasure.
Thank you, Tom.
Cheers, Tom.
So that brings to the end of this week's Runner's World podcast. A huge thanks to our guest, Tom Goom, and to you, of course, for listening.
I'm just typing Runner's World subscription into Google.
To see what comes up.
Guess what's popped up? Oh, my goodness. This is absolutely incredible. There's a winter sale on at the moment.
Oh, my God.
Did you know that? There's a winter 6 months for £6. That means you can get 6 issues of Runner's World for just £6. I've just done it. I've just Googled it, and this is what I found.
That's a fantastic. Almost, I find it hard to believe how that's such a good deal.
Such a good deal. There you go, everyone. Google Runner's World subscription. Head to the Hearst Magazine's website, hearstmagazines.co.uk, and you'll find the 6 months for £6 offer. That's a saving of 87%.
Oh, God.
I mean, if that hasn't brightened up your day, I don't know what will.
Yeah.
And on that note, thank you for listening. You'll hear from us next week.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Okay, I have two new obsessions that I need to share with you. Impress No Glue Press-On Manis and Impress Press-On Falsies Lashes. Trust me, these are getting ready game changers. Both require no glue, so there is no damage to your natural nails and lashes, no mess, and no annoying dry times. Just one step and you're done. Boom. Instant glam. Visit impressbeauty.com/presson and use code PRESSON25 at checkout for 25% off Impress manicure and Press-On falsies.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
This message comes from BOF sponsor eBay. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee. And you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. eBay gets it. So look for the blue check mark next to that thing you love. And be confident that every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is checked by experts. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms.